Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, we'll get to Denton's news in a moment. You're going to be able to hear every single Washington draft pick live right here on the Team 980 starting Thursday night, all right, with coverage from Dudley's in Shirlington. We will simulcast on 106.7 The Fan and 980, right? Denton with Grant and Danny hosting on night one. Denton and I will host night two starting at 7 o'clock. Night two could be really fun with all of the picks that they have. And Linnell will pick it up at 10 o'clock after we are done, if the draft goes beyond 10 o'clock, and it will. And Washington will still have picks to make. And then Saturday, all day coverage right here on 980 with Pete Medhurst and Denton in the driver's seat for that as well. So every single pick starting Thursday night at 8 o'clock right through the last pick on Saturday afternoon will be heard exclusively right here on the Team 980. All right, Denton, let's talk some news and let's start with the Caps.
Yeah, Caps lose yesterday to the Rangers in game one of the wild card. It's funny, Kevin, I was sitting at a Sheetz in Lynchburg as I was driving home from Charlotte, and the score was nothing-nothing. I sit back down with my Cinnabon Delights, which, by the way, best thing on the Sheetz menu, and I look up, and the score's 3-0. I was up for 3 minutes, and they got – you like Cinnabon? The Cinnamon Delights are insane. They're so good.
Are you talking about Cinnabon?
Yeah, Cinnabon Delights at Sheetz. It's by far one of the most slept-on fast food, really? Food menus ever.
Sheetz and Wawa have pretty good sandwiches. So I watched the game. I had some hoops on too, but I was watching Caps Rangers. I thought Charlie Lindgren was outstanding in the first period. I thought defensively they were under siege, but they did a great job. And the bottom line is, going into this series, those that we had on the show last week said, look, they've got a shot because they've got a hot goaltender. And I thought Lindgren was outstanding in that first period, had a couple of big-time saves, both against New York's power play, and we saw six power play opportunities in the first period of that game. And then, you know, even 5-on-5 or 4-on-4, which we saw some of in the first period as well. And I came out of that first period saying, all right, they kind of weathered a bit of an onslaught and some opportunities, and they had some opportunities as well, and you're scoreless, and this is the kind of game I think they're going to want to play in this series, you know, where it comes down to great goaltending and maybe on the other end a deflection off a blade, you know, into the net. But then in 2 minutes and 6 seconds, first of all, how big is that dude Rempe? He's massive on ice. He scores that first goal, which was a beautiful sort of wraparound and then touch pass to Rempe. Then Panarin scores, and then Vesey scores, and it's 2 minutes and 6 seconds of everything getting by Lindgren. I actually didn't think, you know, any of them were terrible goals. Maybe the Panarin goal to a certain degree, the Vesey score deflected, I think, off of Carlson, maybe. But the Caps have not been a come-from-behind team. Those of you that have watched all these games understand that it is, you know, a real great position for the way they play to get that first goal, and certainly not to get down by more than a goal, and they were down 3 in a couple of minutes. So I think we understood it was over. They got one back shortly after Vesey's goal, but just couldn't put enough pressure. And I thought that the Rangers were clearly the better team. I mean, ice tilted, better shot opportunities, more shots, more, you know, puck possession, etc. And they were just clearly the better team. And, you know, without Lindgren, it could have been, you know, 5 or 6 goals ultimately that they gave up. But, you know, good effort in that first period. That was something to build on, I think. They're going to have to score a little bit. You know, one goal's not going to do it, although Lindgren has kept them in a lot of these tight 2-1, 3-2 kind of games. It's one game. They get another shot tomorrow night. And look, in the playoffs, they say this more about the NBA than the NHL. A series really doesn't start until the home team loses a game. Still an opportunity to get a split with a win tomorrow night. But the Rangers, we knew, were much better as a team going into this series, and they showed it in game one, especially in that second period. It was bang, bang, bang. 2 minutes, 6 seconds, 3 goals, game over. Anyway. What else?
A better outcome for the Nats yesterday. They win 6-0 over the Astros. Astros are down a little bit this year, but the Nats are sitting at 10-11 through the first stretch of the season. That's a pretty good spot for them.
Mitchell Parker, all right, now 2-0 with a 1.50 ERA, 12 strikeouts, 0 walks in 2 starts. Beating, by the way, the Dodgers and the Astros. And so the Nats have now won 3 of their last 4 series, beating the Giants before the Dodgers in Houston, right? Am I right about that? Maybe it wasn't the Giants.
It was the Giants.
Was the Giants, right? they won the Houston series, winning 2 games at home. They pushed that series against the Dodgers. No, they won 2 of 3 against the Dodgers, right?
Yeah, they won 2 of 3.
And then they lost the series to the A's, and they won 2 of 3 against San Francisco. I mean, really playing very well, unexpectedly here. Problem is, the division is playing well. The Braves are 14-6. The Phillies have won 6 in a row. Now, they just played the worst team in baseball, the White Sox. The Mets were on a tear before they lost yesterday. And the Nats are 10-11, a game below .500 in fourth place. But, playing some pretty good baseball, and Mitchell Parker really throwing 7 scoreless innings in a 6-0 shutout. That some encouraging stuff. C.J. Abrams again yesterday, 2 for 4. 1 for 4, but 2 runs scored, walk. He's been outstanding. Had another stolen base. I think that was his 4th or 5th of the year. So really exciting stuff right now from the Nationals, and the Dodgers are in town to start a 3-game set tomorrow night. So what else?
So big news out of music. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Class of 2024 announced Ozzy Osbourne, Cher, Mary J. Blige, and A Tribe Called Quest, some of the headliners going in this year.
Huh. I haven't looked at the list. You're not going to get me to be, I'm just not. And Osbourne, Cher, I don't know. Cher's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Okay. Mary J. Blige, I love. One of the great voices. Although there's actually some real controversy between Mary J. Blige and Chaka Khan. All right. Chaka Khan, for me, is maybe the most effortless female voice of all time. She's one of my favorite singers and one of my favorite voices of all time. And she has said before, in the last 5 to 10 years, that Mary J. Blige can't sing. Basically, she can't sing at all. I disagree, but Chaka Khan, the easiest, most effortless female voice. You've got a lot to choose from. So who else? This does not seem to be a super exciting class. Is that the entire group?
There's a few others. Foreigner is getting in. I think Ozzy's
really
the big
foreigners.
You get
a lot of bands that end up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that you're like, it's same with the NFL Hall of Fame. Really, he's a Hall of Famer. It's the Hall of Good. Peter Frampton's in.
Yes, Peter Frampton getting in as well.
Wow. Frampton Comes Alive, a live album in the 1970s, was, I think, at that moment, the biggest selling album of all time. I could be wrong about that. Soon to be supplanted by Rumors, Fleetwood Mac, and then eventually Thriller, Michael Jackson. Look at the list of the top selling albums of all time and tell me where Frampton Comes Alive is on that list. Let me see if I can.
Well, that actually transitions into the next story. I don't think you are necessarily a Swiftie, but the Taylor Swift fans went wild on Friday. She dropped her new album, and according to Spotify, the album had 300 million streams in 24 hours.
I heard. Yeah, insane. My son told me about that. It's incredible. So in terms of this looks like reported sales, all right? So Thriller's number one, or it's actually, we're looking at 40 or more million copies of an album. This might not be the right list, but it looks like it's Thriller. I don't think this is the right list that I'm 50 best selling albums. I'm looking for revenue. Well, that's not the right way to look at it. It would be albums sold, right? Should be albums sold because you have different price points over the years.
It's a hard list to justify now because of streaming and how that's influenced albums.
Yeah. It's not Rolling Stone that you want to look at. Now, I would guess that Thriller, Rumors, is AC/DC Back in Black going to be somewhere up there?
Yeah, that is on this list.
Is it?
On
my
Wikipedia,
my computer just
least.
Froze up. Help me with it. Give me the top 10 all-time best-selling albums.
Well, so I looked at the Wikipedia, 40 million copies or more. Thriller is obviously up there. It's AC/DC, Back in Black. Whitney Houston, The Bodyguard. Dark Side of the Moon with Pink Floyd. Michael Jackson, Bad. The Eagles, Their Greatest Hits, which I don't know if that should count.
Yeah, their Greatest Hits album, yep.
Hotel California, Bad
Out of Hell. What about the Bee Gees album?
Saturday Night
from
Fever.
From the 70s.
Yeah, that's on there.
That's on the list?
Yeah, and then Fleetwood Mac, Rumors. So Frampton is not on the 40 million copies or more list.
He's not. Okay, I could be wrong about that. I think at that moment in time, it was way up there. It may have been, maybe it's the biggest, because I think that was his debut album. It probably came out in 75 or 76, and I think that may have been his debut album. What about, okay, here it is. I was just going to ask you, where's Jagged Little Pill? Because I watched that documentary on Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. What a great documentary that was. Really well done. I think it's Netflix, maybe Hulu. And it's 13th all time. Zeppelin 4, 11. Rumors is now 9 all time. I think at one point it was number 1. Because I think everything, well, no, Hotel California might have been before that. Whatever. All right, what else you got?
All right, did you see over the weekend Howie Schwab passed away from the it was an iconic show for me. I loved Stump the Schwab growing up.
Okay, so I don't know that much about Howie Schwab other than from my close friend, Scott Van Pelt, and those that worked at ESPN that I've known over the years, and they revered the guy. I never watched that show that you're talking about. But I've certainly heard his name many times over the years, and I thought there were so many incredibly nice tributes from ESPN people now and former ESPN people about him. That's sad. He was not an old guy. He was like 64 years old or 65 years old, something like that. What else?
Final thing here. Tom Brady will have a live roast on Netflix on May 5th. It's going to be hosted by Kevin Hart. Obviously, Jeff Ross is going to be there because he's at every roast that is ever put on. And then Kevin Hart teased a lot of special guests will be there. I would guess that Rob Gronkowski will be there in attendance, but Tom Brady getting a live roast on Netflix on the 5th of May.
Really? I wonder how he'll handle it.
I can't imagine well, because what, I mean, what's the one thing?
Give me the list of roasters again.
So we only know Kevin Hart for sure. He's
okay,
hosting
well, he'll
it.
Kill it, obviously.
I mean, and Kevin Hart is a Philadelphia native, and the one sore spot for Tom Brady has seemingly been that he lost a Super Bowl to Nick Foles.
Right.
So those jokes are going to be flying. Jeff Ross thrives on roast. It's like the one thing that's keeping that dude's career alive. He's on every single roast ever since like 2016. So he's going to be a part of it. And then they just teased surprise guests. But I would guess that Gronk will be in there just because he's teammates with Tom and he's doing the
that
media
won't be
stuff.
Smooth.
Yeah, if someone writes for him, it'll be all right. All he got to do is read.
How about Scheffler? He won again. How about the female player, Nelly Korda?
Nelly Korda.
She won for a fifth straight time. You have two dominant individual sport athletes in golf going right now. Nellie Korda just won her fifth straight tournament, including, I think, the first major of the year. And Scheffler just won the RBC in South Carolina. And what is that? That's number four this year with a second-place finish?
So his last five events, first at the Arnold Palmer, first at Players' Championship, second at Texas Children's, first at the Masters, first at RBC Heritage.
Wow.
That's $16 million over 44 days for those that are wondering.
And then Nellie Korda, five straight on the LPGA Tour. Do you guys realize how hard it is to win five in a row in a golf tournament where you've got, you know, 128 golfers to start or whatever the number is? She became the third female player in history to win five in a row. It was first done by Nancy Lopez in the 70s, and then Annika Sörenstam did it in the early 2000s. Nellie Korda's father was a professional tennis player on the tour for years. I think he's Czech. I think so. And then his son is a highly ranked men's tennis player. And then he's got two daughters, Nellie and another one who's also a professional golfer. Quite the athletic family. Peter Korda, as a tennis player, I don't think he ever won a major, but he was ranked really high for many years. Oh, he's Australian. No. He won the Australian. He's Czech. Yeah, he's Czech. He won the 1998 Australian Open. So he is a one-time major winner and was the runner-up at the 92 French Open. Is that the French Open that was won by Michael Chang? No, Jim Courier beat him. So Chang would have been either the year before or 2 years before, maybe. I don't know. All right, let's get to Ben Standing next.